ask you a question. Are you decisive? Are you confident? And can you stick to the story when the pressure is on? These are all things that sooner or later, if you're in medical sales, you're going to be faced with it. Hello again, my medical sales friends, and let me welcome you to another episode of the Medical Sales Guru Podcast and the combined medical sales channel on YouTube. I'm glad that you're here because we're going to talk about something that's relevant in medical sales. And if it hasn't been relevant yet, or if it doesn't seem relevant right now, I promise you that at some point in the future, it will be. You know, one of the toughest situations is when you have to face a customer who's unhappy with your product, unhappy with you, and he or she is really laying on their discontent. It's not a great place to be, but you got to stay cool. And there's going to be times when you're going to have to subordinate your ego. That means place your ego aside, even when you're being personally attacked. It's not easy, but the best thing to do is to have a plan ahead of time and stick to the facts, to present it the way you know you're supposed to present it. As a medical sales rep, you have a lot of constraints on what you can say and what you could do. You have to conform to guidelines that are not only put forth by your company, but also by the industry. And specifically, I'm talking about FDA guidelines with respect to what you could say about indications and what you can't say. Here's one of the things you have to recognize with your job. Your job is not to render medical advice. Now, a lot of reps do this. You know, you'll hear reps saying, well, I was in the operating room and I told them to do this and I saved this patient because I told the doctor to do this. Does this happen? Yeah, it probably does. But here's the thing. Anytime you start invoking your opinion or your experience versus what's published in the surgical protocol or how to use your product or the indications for your product, you're crossing that line, you're coming very close to crossing that line. Plus, it's always nice to, and easier and more professional. It just makes things easier when you stay within the confines of what you're allowed to do and what you're allowed to say. Let me give you an example of this from my own selling days. And, you know, keep in mind when you look at me, you know, and you see this guy with white hair and you're thinking, well, you know, gosh, things have changed since he was selling. First of all, it wasn't that long ago. And no, things really haven't changed from the things that I'm sharing with you. Number one, you are dealing with a healthcare professional who is dealing with a patient, and their concern is about creating the outcome that the patient expects and that they have been more or less contracted to provide for that patient. They want to minimize risk. They want to be able to do it as comfortably as possible. And if anything runs contrary to those expectations or desires, you're going to have some unhappy customers. You're going to find yourself in this situation. So I was, and getting back to what I was saying here, that prevails today. It prevails always. Doctors and other healthcare professionals are out to provide a result. And if that goal is compromised, they're going to be unhappy with it. So that hasn't changed. I just wanted to preface that up front, okay? Not some old guy giving you something that isn't relevant. It's an old guy giving you something that is relevant. And I'm not that old. And I take umbrage at you even thinking that. I've had this white hair for a long time. In fact, it started when I was in my 20s. Yeah, that's right. Prematurely gray. But I'm digressing. Let me tell you the story I want to share with you. I had a surgeon who gives me a call one day. Actually, his office called me because this surgeon would never call me. He was like above speaking to sales reps on the telephone. And they said, you need to come to the office right away. I'm going to call the doctor, Dr. Tim. Dr. Tim was very, very upset. The person who called, it was his physician's assistant, says, Dr. Tim's really upset. He had a problem with your product. He did a hip fracture. He's had two of them fall apart. And I'm thinking, fall apart? How could it fall apart? So anyway, I go to the doctor's office, and of course, I'm in my professional demeanor as always. You know, hello, Dr. Tim. What's the problem? And he just gets in my face. I'll tell you what the problem is. Your product has failed me twice. Your product design is faulty. And he throws up an x-ray, and he says, look at that. Your product fell apart. So this was a device that was called a compression hip screw. It's not used as much anymore as it was, but it basically was a side plate that went on the side of the femur, and it had a big screw that passed through a tube up into the femoral head, and it was designed so it could slide to compress the fracture. Here was the way it was supposed to be used. The surgeon, when he was doing the surgical procedure, he would measure the distance. He would put a guide pin up into the femoral head, and then he would measure the distance from the side of the femur to the tip of the guide pin, which was just in the subchondral bone beneath the femoral head. And then he would either use that length or he would subtract some distance to have what was called the pilot length. This was the length of the lag screw he was supposed to be used. So I looked at the x-ray and I could tell that the lag screw that was used was way too short. I mean, the patient's femur was this long. The lag screw was this long. So if he really screwed that up into the femoral head, yeah, it was going to fall apart because it was too short. And I'd seen plenty of these. I looked at this x-ray and I looked at the other x-ray and they were both too short. So I asked the question, which to me seemed like a very logical question. And I said, "Dr. Tim, did you measure the pilot length?" And he was angry to start with, but now he became even more angry. I mean, he got red in the face, got real close to my face, and he said, "Son, who the hell do you think you're talking to here?" And I said, I beg your pardon. And the next thing he said, I'm not going to repeat, because he said, "You're not working with some of those." And he referred to the ethnicity of some surgeons that I worked with, because he didn't like them because of their ethnicity. And it was really a racial slur. And he's in my face. And he said, "Who the hell do you think you're talking to? I am an orthopedic surgeon. I am a board certified orthopedic surgeon. And I am the best orthopedic surgeon who operates at that hospital. So don't think you could come in here and tell me what to do." Well, think about what I was feeling at that moment. The first thing I was feeling was anger, because he made a racially divisive remark about some other surgeons that I worked with and made me very uncomfortable. Now, I wanted to just say, "You know what? Screw you," and walk out of there. But I had a more important mission in being here. He used one of my products that he was saying was faulty. And it was very clear that this patient had to be reoperated on, and he was at risk of being sued. I had to keep my cool. I had to subordinate my ego and deal with the problem. And I stuttered a little bit because I could still feel the emotions that I had when this was going on. So I looked at him and I said, "Dr. Tim, so I understand you're upset, and let's talk about working out the problem here." I said, "When I asked you about the pilot length, I'm not trying to judge you as a surgeon or trying to tell you how to do surgery. My limitations as a sales representative and training only go to the surgical protocol, the procedure that's in the protocol." And I took one out of my bag and I opened it to the page about measuring the pilot length. He didn't want to hear about it. He says, "You know what? I'm done talking to you. Your product is defective. You don't know how to use it. And I want to talk to an engineer from your company, because this is a defective product and I might get sued because of your defective product. So I want you to have an engineer call me, and you could leave now, Mr. Haroff." He used to call me Mr. Haroff, wouldn't call me by the first name. So I left and I got in touch with the company about arranging a call with an engineer. But I had found out that when I left the doctor's office, he called the president of my, he demanded to speak to the president of my company and said, "Sir, you have a sales rep here that doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't know what he's selling. He doesn't know how to use the product. And we've got a real problem. I need to speak to, you know, someone from your company to, you know, you need to come down and fix this." So the distributor I work for gets a call saying, we've got a real problem. I just had a call from one of your surgeons, and your boy Mace over there, he's an idiot. He doesn't know what's going on. Because I was relatively new. The president of the company doesn't know anything about me. You know, he's, you know, 1,000 miles away in another city. And, you know, my future was really on the line here. But here's what they said they were doing. They were going to send in the area vice president, to come and meet with Dr. Tim right away, because they wanted to fix this problem and wanted to hear his side of the story. And I knew that if they sided with Dr. Tim, my job was probably history. As you can guess, that probably didn't happen. But anyway, I picked up, the area vice president. His name was Ed, and we drove to see Dr. Tim. And as soon as we got in front of Dr. Tim, he gets in Ed's face, the area vice president, nicely, a guy in his, late 50s, early 60s, wearing a suit, and he says, "Your company owes me an apology. Your product is defective, and your sales rep here doesn't know what he's talking about." And Ed looks at me and he says, why are you saying that he doesn't know what he's talking about? Because he's blaming it on me for this mistake here. And Ed looks at me and he says, "Mace, what did you tell Dr. Tim here that he's so upset about?" And I said, "Well, to be honest with you, Ed, all I did was I referenced the surgical technique. And, what I think the case is here is that the lag screw is not long enough, looking at that, the ones that I've seen, and it's predicated, the length of the lag screw is predicated on the pilot length." And I had asked Dr. Tim if he measured the pilot length. And here, Dr. Tim interrupts me and says, "Listen, you know what? If all you're going to do is point to your book there, I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I could write that book. If you're just going to point to that book and tell me what I should be doing, then you could get out of your office right now. I'm not going to use your product anymore." And Ed tried to cajole Dr. Tim, tried to calm him down. Doctor didn't want to hear about it, just didn't want to hear about it. And basically said, "Well, if you change your mind, Dr. Tim, we'll be happy to work with you. If you want to talk to the engineers, I will put you in touch with them." And he says, "Yeah, I want to talk to the engineers. You owe me an apology." So the last I heard, we left the office. And by the way, what Ed, the area vice president, said to me, he says, "Mace, it's up to you, but I don't care if you never call on this guy again." He said, "That guy is an a-hole." He said, "I've never experienced anything like that." And long story short, the engineer got in touch with him, had a similarly bad experience, but it quieted down. And guess what? The doctor continued to use my product and started using it the right way. So why am I sharing all of this with you? Because it's a lot of information. Several things here. First of all, I had a job to do. And the job was to try and fix what was wrong with the product. I had a surgeon who was pretty much insulting me, insulting other surgeons who worked with me. And it would have been very easy to walk out. I could have said, "You know what? Screw you. I'm out of here." I didn't do that. And it was hard not to do that. In fact, a lot of people said, "Why didn't you do that?" And I said, because I was there to do my job. And that was to try and help him to get the right outcome for his patients. Plus, there was a potential liability situation with the product and with the surgeon. So that was the first thing. I set my ego and my feelings aside. The next thing was I recognized that there was only so much I could do. And trying to invoke my opinion would have been worthless because the surgeon, when you're in front of a surgeon, understand what that surgeon, what that doctor, what that healthcare professional sees. He or she sees a sales rep. That person that you're talking to is a healthcare professional. They've been trained. They will always value their knowledge and experience over yours. Now, they get to choose whether or not they want to listen to you and whether they want to value and take to heart that information that you're providing. But if you are rendering an opinion, if you're trying to share with them your vast experience and depth of knowledge, and you cannot hang that on some sort of published third-party reference, which was produced by one of their peers. In other words, if you're talking to a surgeon, an orthopedic surgeon in my case, if it's not based on what another orthopedic surgeon says, you lose. If you're talking to a neurologist and the information is not coming from a colleague to a neurologist, which is another neurologist, you're probably going to lose. You need to be able to have a solid third-party reference that you can go to, and you need to adhere to that. Even when they're bearing down on you and you want to say, "Look, man, I've seen thousands of these and I'm telling you the way it's done." That's not going to work with a trained, certified, and very egoic healthcare professional. All you can do is quote what you know is right, what you've been trained. If a surgeon or a doctor or some other healthcare professional chooses to deviate from the indications for your product or the protocol for using your product, then that is on them. They're going to have to deal with the consequences. They're going to have to deal with the liability. If Dr. Tim got sued, and I don't think he ever did get sued, I think he reoperated and I never heard any more about it, so I don't know what the outcome was. But let's say he did get sued and went to court. Expert witness is going to say he didn't do it the right way. He didn't follow the surgical protocol. And that's on him. As long as you are sharing information that can be substantiated, that can be documented in a legal proceeding, or in any type of situation, then you're doing the right thing. Sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes your ego wants to step in and say, hey, listen, I know how this is done. I've seen this done 1,000 times. Not the way to approach it. And when you're dealing with difficult customers, recognize that there's only so much you can do. And a lot of times, bringing in a higher authority, someone from your company who is a manager, or higher, maybe an executive, a vice president, or even the president, or an engineer, or a product manager, is going to do a couple of things. Number one, it's going to take the pressure off of you, because you can't make these decisions. You can't really tell a customer what you're going to do or not do without checking with the higher-ups first. So if you could put them in touch with the higher-up, it makes your life easier right off the bat. But the other thing that it does when you refer to these higher authorities is it shows that you take the situation seriously and that you are elevating it to a higher status. You want to get it solved. So you're going to bring people in who can make the decisions and can direct other people to fix the problem. I think the last thing is that when you default to higher authorities and the official surgical protocol, the official indications for how your product is to be used, then really what you're doing is you're taking it off of yourself and you're putting yourself in a comfortable situation knowing that you're doing your job the way your job is intended to be done. And it helps to deal with those tough situations. And it doesn't require a whole lot of thinking because you're always defaulting to your training and the right way of doing things. So I hope this has been helpful because you're going to find yourself in these situations and you're a human being. Your ego sometimes gets in the way. And yes, you should have an ego. You know, if you didn't have an ego, you probably wouldn't shower or brush your teeth or comb your hair. And that wouldn't be a good thing for anybody, especially the people around you, because you probably wouldn't smell very good. But it's decide now. I bring up these situations and I present them to you here on the Medical Sales Guru podcast or on the video because I want you to think about what you're going to do if and when these things happen to you. Because when you're in these situations, you're going to find that your emotions go up. You feel stressed. And there's a reality. There's a truthism here. When emotions go up, intelligence goes down. And I'm not saying you're stupid. What I'm going to say is when your emotions are up, when you're stressed, chances are you're not doing your best thinking at that moment. And think about this. Anytime you've been in an argument with someone where your emotions are flying high. And when the argument is over and, hours later, you said, man, I wish I would have said this. I wish I would have used this comeback. And the reason why is because when you calm down, you're thinking better and you come up with better ideas. So when you get into a tense situation with one of your customers, know in advance, how you're going to react, how you're going to respond. It'll make your life much, much easier. And always look for those people in your company, in your organization, that you could defer to as a higher authority who could help work out the situation. By the way, there's another benefit to doing this. If someone has to come in and give your customer bad news, in other words, if someone has to suggest that the customer is wrong or that this can't be done or we're not going to do that for you, which is probably going to make the customer unhappy, it's better if it's not you. It's better if you could let someone else bring in the bad news because it helps you to preserve the relationship as best as you possibly can. So anyway, I hope this was helpful. Think ahead of time what you're going to do. This is what training is all about. Training is about deciding what you're going to do before you actually have to use it. It's why I provide training in the form of Medical Sales Academy. And you could check this out at medicalsalesacademy.com. It's my online 24-hour a day, 7-day a week, 365 days a year training and support site for medical sales professionals, where I will describe in the training various scenarios and ways of handling it, ways of responding to objections, the right kinds of questions to ask, how to identify what your customers really want, and how to position your product or service specifically so that to your customers, it appears to be the exact solution that they're looking for. You can learn this and more in Medical Sales Academy. Check it out. Don't use any excuses. If enrollment is closed when you get there and you think you're ready to jump on board, send me an email, mace@medicalsalestraining.com. Periodically, we have room that opens up until we do our open enrollments a few times a year, and I'll do what I can to get you in. Medicalsalesacademy.com. Thanks for checking that out. And thank you for being here today, because it helps you to be a medical sales professional as opposed to just being a medical sales rep. There's a big difference, and hopefully you can figure out what that is. By being here, you've taken a step closer, or you've helped to reinforce who you really are. And don't forget that as you go through your medical sales career, why you really do what you do. Yeah, I know it's a job and you do it to get paid and to feed your family and pay the mortgage and all that good stuff. But if you remember this, you do it to help the patient. Nothing that you do is more important than the patient. If you keep that in mind, your results are going to go up. You're going to sell more, and you're going to feel pretty good about what you do. And that's valuable. The patient always comes first, my friend. Thank you for being here and joining me on this episode of the Medical Sales Guru Podcast and the Medical Sales Video Channel on YouTube. I hope you'll join me again next time. But until then, my name is Mace Haroff. I hope you'll go out there and do some good. Bye for now.